This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Friday, March 24th, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Director General of the WTO says time is running out for the Doha round of world trade talks to be successful. Also, Creekstone Farms is taking USDA to court, and U.S. rice has, for the first time, arrived on South Korean shores. I'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, agricultural weather and a commentary from the Farm Bureau. So here's hoping you're in the mood for the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Friday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. May wheat, 401 and a half down 6. May wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 342 and a half down 1 and a half. July, 354 and a half down 1 and 3 quarters. May corn, 218 and 3 quarters down a half. July, 229 and 3 quarters down a half. September, 239 and a half unchanged. December, 251 and a half up a quarter. May soybeans, 573 and 3 quarters down 1. July, 587 down a half. August, 591 and a half down a half. November, 603 and a quarter up a quarter. May soybean meal, 175.30 up 140. May soybean oil, 22.74 down 29. At the Merck March feeders, 103.45 down 120. April live cattle, 82.47 and a half down 80. April lean hogs, 58.72 and a half up 50. Joining us now on the telephone for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey there, Dave.
Well, we begin over on the Merck side where June, October, and December contracts in the live cattle pit all had new contract lows. And then to top it all off, we get the cattle on feed report at 2 o'clock, and the placements number really is way up there.
Yeah, they must have sniffed out some of the report numbers. It looked like when you got the final numbers coming out, 108 on feed and placements 105, both those at the top of the range. It may be a rough report for spring and summer futures. We would think probably, Dave, 50 lower is the opening call going to be here coming up Sunday night, Monday morning for the front-end futures. Now, one thing we noted this morning is about a spec buy potential. If we took our hedger hat and looked at a spec potential buy in the technical side of the market, it would be the live cattle. We wanted to wait for this report. We're sure glad we did. But we would say if the June market can violate the June futures, the 10-day moving average on a closing basis, and fade this bearish of a report, that could be a very nice spec buy next week. So we'll be talking to our clients about that.
How are we going to get rid of all these cattle? It's 12.023 million head, the highest March in history?
It's tough, and we know that's because of the wheat. We're thinking, though, that with the fact we've gotten moisture back in the plains, and I had just gotten off the phone a couple hours ago with our friend in Kansas City at the Board of Trade, and he was back home near Hutchinson, Kansas, and he had gotten, you know, an inch of rain and 2 to 4 inches of snow, so he has gotten a lot of rain. His dad's got a lot of cattle. He's looking at keeping those back and not putting them in the lots like he was thinking about doing at the end of this month. So we think maybe we're going to turn a corner here as far as holding cattle out of the lots, keeping them on grain, or excuse me, on wheat pasture here a little bit longer, maybe tighten up the supplies. I think the other thing we saw on the cold storage report was that we are killing aggressively, and what we're killing, we're not really building a lot of storage. So we're using up what we're killing. That says the retail market and the wholesale market is profitable. It may not be a great profit, but it is profitable right now.
Let's turn our attention to the Chicago Board of Trade, where May wheat fell to fresh 2-week lows, and on weekly continuation charts was down 15 on the week. There's really nothing there to get all excited about.
No, not at all. And we saw that Iraq did purchase, the USDA confirmed 150,000 metric tons of our U.S. wheat, but not much reaction there. It looked like to us, and from what we've gleaned from the traders up in Chicago at EFG this afternoon, the map showing good precip next week, really towards the end of the week especially, really probably put a lot of damper on this Iraqi news. And as a whole, the market traded technicals most of the day, it looked like to us.
And actually broke up below the 100-day moving average on a closing basis. That can't bode well for Monday.
No, that's right. And we also stayed below the 200-day in July futures. So that's going to be really, really tough to overcome. It would take something like the acreage report and the stocks report to be able to change the map of the way the chart looks right now. And that's something we want to wait and see before recommending any new hedges. In fact, we sent out on our weekend email last Sunday that if you were a person who had made some sales in both new crop wheat and new crop corn and hadn't bought calls prior to making the sales and didn't buy calls earlier in the season, you might want to look at picking some of those calls up as we go lower here into the acreage report. And we're still going to recommend that to our hedgers this next week, Dave.
In the corn and soybean pits, the deferred contract showed some strength.
It did. And, you know, mostly a local market today. The funds were noticeably absent, so it was a quiet market, but it had a decent look to it as a whole. And, you know, as far as the wheat goes, when you compare the corn action to the wheat, it really stood up fairly well. And maybe we've gotten to a point where we've priced in enough of the weather getting better and the moisture levels getting better, and the trade seems pretty satisfied here at this 250 level, maybe going into the report.
Although I suppose we, again, like in the wheat, need to keep an eye on the 100-day moving average. It is approaching that, 249 and three quarters or thereabouts.
That's exactly right, and the same goes with December futures. It's been straddling its 200-day moving average, and we went above that in mid-January, and that was one of the big reasons we felt like that maybe the index guys and the funds were coming in like they did and added to their positions, is because we were able to get above that in a convincing manner. So we really don't want to lose that support this time of year. It might mean more of a grinding lower type market. But having said that, we would still say big picture for the hedgers, if you take corn down in the December futures to 240, say, you know, and go towards our undervalue of 237, 240, and you slap on a 35-cent basis, you're dealing with, you know, loan-level corn going into actual physical planting. So we would say you don't have much risk premium in the corn market at that point. And to have calls in place in December futures, then you're looking at a decent risk reward between now and mid-June.
Meanwhile, over in the soybean pit, lead option hanging around 572, and the Noves are still hanging around 603.5.
Yeah, and Chicago did note that the bean oil led the selling on mediocre volume, one real heavy volume, but bean oil did lead the market lower, led the beans lower. They're thinking oil meal spread unwinding was the main cause, and that makes sense to us fundamentally, because we saw in the census report earlier this week that we had a very high oil stocks number. I think it's around 70% in soy oil stocks over last year at this time. And so our anticipation is that the bean oil is going to be a weight to the market here in the near term, and the meal is going to be a positive look, especially technically, in the market. We noted that July meal, for instance, was able to stay above its 10-day moving average today and actually close above it. So we might have a continuation of this oil meal spread unwinding, and meal takes over maybe a better looking role to it, and the oil takes back into control of the negative tone in the market.
Don't want to put too pretty a picture on it, because on continuation charts on a weekly basis, May still down 2.75, the D's down 1.75 in the beans, the May down 2.75, the Nove's down 2. I wonder though, with the planning intentions report due out a week from today, whether the trade might just go ahead and call it quiet for most of the week with maybe one day of speculation on the report.
You know, that makes sense to us. You know, two things that we're going to watch for is the Brazilian real. It had a lot of movement today and this week. It made, you know, the dollar made some gains against the real this week, Dave, and we want to see if that's the beginning of the trend. I think the other thing we've talked to our clients about is if you haven't done any bean hedging yet and you're just on the fence, then let's wait until we get below 598 on a closing basis in November futures. That is, to us, a rock-solid support line that cannot be taken out here. You're opening up the downside quite a bit, and so with the market only 5 cents away from that, it's not going to hurt anything to hold off to the acreage and stocks report to see what the most up-to-date fundamentals say. The only thing we caution people about that, though, is you got to be fast on your feet if you close below 598 in November beans. And the other thing we've noticed in these last few years, since the funds have come on board in these grains, these trade reactions, the trade reaction to these reports that we have may not be what you would think based upon the fundamentals, and it's simply because the fundamentals are not being looked at by the funds when they put positions on, and so when they take positions off, it may be a more of a matter of time and time of year and market timing versus the actual numbers. It may be that they take positions off just because the acreage report is out into the market as opposed to what the acreage report actually says. So it's pretty tough to play the reports when you're a hedger because oftentimes you'll get a fundamental report that looks friendly and the market goes down, or it looks negative and the market goes up, and that's because the funds have already done their thing in the market earlier in the year.
Mike, we'll talk to you again in a week.
Dave, we thank you for having us on, and have a nice weekend, sir.
You too, sir. Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities. He is in Lafayette, Indiana. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Climate Center. AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser's forecasts for Illinois and Indiana tonight. Cloudy with some flurries north and central and a few sprinkles and flurries south, lows ranging from 26 to 31. Then tomorrow in west central and southwestern Illinois, a mix of clouds and sunshine. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy with scattered flurries and sprinkles, highs ranging from 37 in far northern Indiana to 50 degrees in far southern Illinois. In agricultural news, Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. will be meeting next week to focus on implementation of the final phases of the North America Free Trade Agreement. NAFTA gave the three nations until 2008 to prepare for full trade liberalization. Among the items scheduled to take place on January 1st of 2008, the U.S. will drop its tariff on Mexican sugar to zero. Trade between the three nations was nearly $810 billion in 2005. The Alabama cow that tested positive last week for mad cow disease was a rolling stone. USDA says it has tracked the cow to at least 13 different locations in its life, with at least 32 separate movements. Investigations are complete on 27 movements. USDA has not yet said it has found the cow's birth herd or records to confirm the cow's age. Kansas meatpacker Creekstone Farms filed suit yesterday against USDA in the Federal Court District of Washington, D.C. over the department's refusal to let the firm voluntarily test all its cattle for BSE. Creekstone CEO John Stewart says the company's Japanese customers want total testing. USDA maintains 100% testing flies in the face of science. Stewart says science is not the issue.
We have not gone into the scientific side of this. We have our own opinions about the science of this. Personally, I think BSE is not understood enough today to really come to scientific conclusions. But having said that, we're testing these cattle because our consumers have asked us to test.
Stewart says the company filed the suit because USDA officials in three meetings over the past 2 years have asked him, in his words, please be patient, but have taken no action. The lawsuit questions whether USDA has the authority to control BSE tests under the Virus Serum Toxin Act of 1913, a law Stewart says is outdated.
This act was developed actually in the days of hog cholera. And it gave the government a very broad authority to control the kits that were used to detect this cholera. The USDA is using that obscure act as a way to exert their authority to control the sale of these kits.
USDA officials declined to comment on the lawsuit. President George Bush signed legislation Thursday that ends Cold War-era trade restrictions on Ukraine, opening the way for the former Soviet republic to join the World Trade Organization. The measure frees Ukraine from a 1974 law that links trade benefits to human rights policies of former or current communist states. Senate Finance Chairman Chuck Grassley said during a telephone call to reporters from Brazil yesterday that he has heard nothing to make him optimistic that trade negotiators can make progress in the World Trade Organization Doha Round talks by the next deadline at the end of April.
Just the meeting we just came from. For instance, I said, you know, we put an offer on the table in October. We don't get any credit for it. We'll put an offer on the table on March the 23rd. And they'll come back and say it's not enough, and you put put an offer on the table in April and May, and it's not enough. That's not the way you negotiate. My point that I'm trying to make is that you solve these issues by sitting at the table and negotiating. And either we're going to get an agreement or we aren't going to get an agreement. If we negotiate, it might bring us to fruition. If we don't, then we might as well say Doha round is over.
Meanwhile, WTO Director Pascal Lamy says now is a moment of truth for the Doha round, adding its success or failure will be determined in the next 40 days. Lamy says the U.S. has to move on domestic farm support, the EU must move on agricultural tariffs, and the G20 nations must move on industrial tariffs. But Senate Ag Committee Chairman Saxby Chambliss continued to play the game of chicken, saying Europe must put a real offer on the table.
I also made it very plain to Mandelson and to Ambassador Fortman that I am a lot more concerned about farmers in Paris, Texas, than I am about farmers in Paris, France.
Chambliss says that he and U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman have an explicit understanding that the Doha round would not force the U.S. to dismantle its farm safety net. And the first shipment of U.S. rice for direct sale to consumers in South Korea arrived on Thursday amid farmer protests against foreign rice imports. The shipment comes as part of a 2004 agreement that South Korea signed with the U.S., China, Thailand, and six other rice-producing countries to gradually open up its rice market. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Roachkiss says March Madness would be impossible if not for agriculture.
During National Agriculture Week, March 19th through the 25th, the Shelby County Farm Bureau wants to remind you that agriculture is more than farming. It's basketball, too. So often we think of agriculture as the food we eat, but in fact, agriculture is a team player. The plants and animals grown on Illinois farms can be found in every aspect of basketball. One of the most obvious examples is the basketball itself. It is made with leather. According to Wilson Sporting Goods, 11 basketballs can be made with a single cowhide. There are less apparent ways that agriculture gets into the game, from tennis shoes to ankle wraps, uniforms to laundry detergent, and score sheets to stop clocks. Farm products can be found in every play. Agriculture's role in sporting equipment has evolved along with the sports themselves. Take football, for instance. These pig skins were originally made of pigs' bladders blown up like balloons. Needless to say, the smell needed some improvement, so they covered the bladder with four pieces of cowhide. That's right, the leather on pigskins were never really actually made from the leather from a pig. The football evolved again when the pig bladder was replaced with rubber, but agriculture had a role in that too. Cornstarch is used to coat the molds for rubber, and even the synthetic materials used today to make more affordable footballs. Whether you're a player or a spectator, National Agriculture Week is a time to celebrate the thousands of everyday objects that are possible because of Illinois farmers. I guess that's what makes the men and women of agriculture the original farm team. This is Amy Rochkiss with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkiss's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of the station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Looks to me like some elevators are trying to pry a bushel or two of corn away from folk by improving basis somewhat.
We've seen some basis improvements and kind of across the board. Looks like the processor indicator improved corn basis 3 cents yesterday. Rail numbers improved earlier in the week and sounds like they might be getting a little bit better here in the near term. The river numbers bumped up a little bit. I think what we've seen is with kind of the crash and burn in the flat prices, not surprisingly, the farmers selling stopped, and we've seen a little bit of a hole in the movement here, so we've got the basis popping up. Now, is that going to generate any farmer cash movement, or will it move up enough to get some hedged inventories? Because there are still quite a bit of hedged grain sitting out there.
So what prices are farmers looking to sell with the futures falling like they are?
Boy, yeah, it seems like they're in shock. On Tuesday's pop, we got to 208 nearby, and we saw a little bit of movement that day, but it's been relatively slow, you know, any other day than that. And that wasn't a big day. I think it was just more by comparison.
Meanwhile, over in the soybeans, huge oil stocks still out there. Looks like the crush slowing down some. Price is pretty flat.
Price is flat there, and that crush number makes you look like maybe the USDA is still overestimating what we have for crush for the year. So I think we can have another downtick there. Record bean carryout projected for the end of this year, and I think that'll grow some.
What do you think will happen next Friday when Planning on Intentions report comes out?
Well, I guess that's the big question here. Corn-wise, we're going to see some reduction across central Illinois, not a huge swing, I don't think. I think the biggest swings will be in some more in the periphery areas. So I don't think we'll see as big of a move here. I guess I just have to go with trade estimates right now.
What about your prices today?
We are at 208. Excuse me, that was buy some corn there. How about 203 on the nearby and 553 on the beans?
I'm ready to buy that 208 corn, Bruce.
Okay.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. And in about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Jurors in Bloomington watched videos today that prosecutors say dispute Maurice Legrone Jr.'s account of how a car sank in Clinton Lake, drowning three young children. The videos were of reenactments that showed the car's brakes held and it backed up the boat ramp. Legrone had told police the car had rolled forward when he put it in reverse and that its tires spun before sinking. President Bush told an audience in Indianapolis today that people should vote Republican if they want to keep more of their hard-earned money. The president said the Democratic economic record consisted of loud noises and votes against tax cuts. Bush spoke at a fundraiser for Indiana 9th District Congressman Mike Sodrell, who's expected to face a tight re-election battle against Democrat Barron Hill. Community leaders say John Lee Johnson will be hard to replace as an activist for justice in Champaign-Urbana. Johnson died last night at Carle Foundation Hospital, 3 months after undergoing surgery to remove an abdominal tumor. The lifelong Champaign-Urbana resident helped organize the Project 500 program to bring more African-American students to the U of I, and he spearheaded a 1997 racial equity lawsuit that led the Champaign Unit for Schools to implement programs to help black students. Johnson also served 2 terms on the Champaign City Council. Funeral arrangements for the 64-year-old Johnson are pending. Backers of a bill making it easier for municipal governments in Illinois to take over private water utilities hope new amendments will satisfy opponents. The bill passed an Illinois House committee yesterday, with amendments meant to ease concerns of water companies and labor unions. The measure, which has already passed the Senate, would free cities from having to get Illinois Commerce Commission approval before they use eminent domain powers to take over local water systems. Officials at the University of Illinois' Urbana-Champaign campus attribute a jump in the number of applications to recruiting trips and an increase in the number of high school students. For the first time, U of I recruiters visited schools in Peoria, East St. Louis, and Rockford. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, as I look out the window, I see snow a-falling, but it's not sticking. What are we looking at right now?
Well, it looks like probably a little bit more of the same through most of tomorrow. We have an upper low that's back, basically rotated back over the Midwest over the last couple of days from Canada. And because of the cold, unstable air aloft, we're getting a lot of clouds and convection and these snow showers that are rotating through much of central Illinois right now. But with temperatures above freezing and this late in the season and a high sun angle, we're not going to see anything sticking, except maybe overnight a little bit might stick if we get some snow showers with the temperatures below freezing. But just some snow showers probably through tomorrow and then some improving weather Sunday.
A much larger storm system advertised to move through the Midwest late next week?
Yeah, it looks like we might have a little weak one here Monday, Tuesday, could bring some showers. The one late in the week, about Thursday or so, has been showing up in the models for the last several days. Getting a little different reads on different runs on exact intensity, but it looks like it's going to bring some significant rain again to Illinois by the end of the week, so we'll be able to put some more moisture back in the soil.
Would say that we've made a big dent in our lack of water in the soil in, I don't know, last 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, March has been a very good month so far for Illinois. The biggest dent has been in the southeastern half of the state, which pretty much most of the drought, if not all, has been wiped out there. We still have deficits in the north, and we're seeing that mostly in stream flows and the soil moisture measurements and groundwater. So we need to get more precip to recharge the deeper soil moisture, and if we can do that, then we'll be a little bit more resistant if things go a little dry during the summer.
What particular places in the north are still needing some more moisture?
Well, I would say probably anywhere from Bloomington on northwestward really could use some more. They've gotten plenty this month so far, but you don't get rid of a 6-8 month drought in just 3 weeks in most cases. We'll need to keep precipitation coming fairly regularly for another 4 to 6 weeks.
Put on your long-range forecast hat for a moment and tell us whether or not you think, on average, we might have a wetter-than-average or drier-than-average spring.
Well, right now, with 1 month of the spring really pretty much in the can with the month of March and April right now looking to continue this wet trend, at least through the medium-range models, I would say that probably the prospects for a normal to wetter than normal spring are pretty good right now. We could dry up a little bit later in the spring. But if I think when you look at it in total, we're going to be probably have a fairly good spring here in the Midwest.
Thank you very much, Steve.
All right, Dave.
Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 Central Time for Commodity Week, our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. This is Dave Dickey.